to Muffin Talk. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or the Catholic Church. Today I've invited Brother Kieran Finn to a Zoom recording for a broadcast. Brother Kieran, a warm welcome and hi, Ramai, to our radio program.
Kia ora, Beate.
Brother Kieran Finn is a Champagnat brother and Bible scholar. He's originally from Gisborne and has spent many years in adult education, teaching scripture in New Zealand and abroad, and on Zoom with Titiponamo Study and Joy. Titiponamo Study and Joy is planning another two series with Brother Kieran, one series on Mary and another series on the women in the Bible. Last week, Debbie Miller from the Jewish congregation mentioned in her interview some names of women in the Bible: Ruth and Naomi, Miriam, Sarah, Rebecca, Esther, and Dina. Debbie also raised the question of why these stories got into the Bible. In the times of the Bible, women were often marginalized. Brother Kieran, who would you see as the most marginalized of the women of Genesis from your point of view?
From Genesis, yes. Certainly, we meet early on the story of Hagar, one of those fascinating times when the ancestress, Sarah, is in danger and the being passed off as Abraham's sister rather than his wife. And then, of course, we have the plagues that strike. And then the Pharaoh, who is an honorable man, sends Abraham and Sarah away with gifts. And among them, there seems to have been Hagar, the Egyptian, the powerless foreigner. That is an interesting term, powerless foreigners, because there are echoes today in our own society. And Hagar is a person with little control over her destiny. She is both foreigner and slave. But she is the one who is to, first of all, bear a son for Abraham because Sarah is unable to conceive. Now, it's interesting that in the household of Abraham, he has this servant who's been there for the long time, and he is the obvious one to inherit, perhaps, before the birth of Ishmael. You have a servant son as possible potential inheritor. You have a foreigner son. But the promised child with promise is son, who eventually arrives. But
the expectation is to have the son from Sarah, but
yes.
if this doesn't happen, then you still have the other options from the household.
Yes, yes, yes. And of course, she's a fascinating person, this Hagar, powerless, but she's the first woman in the Hebrew Bible to actually receive an apparition, an annunciation. Because when she flees from her mistress, who treats her cruelly in reaction to her Hagar having a child, she flees. And then an angel, then God speaks to her, and she is told to return. But God actually makes a promise to her, a promise that her child will inherit also, will become the father of a great nation, Ishmael. It's a fascinating story. And two nations bear God's name, Israel and Ishmael. The name Ishmael means God hears. And there's a lot of hearing going on in the story, especially when Hagar is driven out a second time into the wilderness. And there, of course, there's no water. Eventually it runs out. And She can't bear to see the death of her child. Talk about it, an image we're familiar with, the mother holding the child.
Hmm.
She leaves the child under a bush and she goes away so she won't hear the crying of the child, of her son, who's dying of thirst. And then, what does God hear? Does God hear the weeping of the mother or the cries of the child?
He would hear both, wouldn't he?
Well, it tells us, the text tells us, there is that author at work, that God heard the crying of the child. In her first outing, escaping, she named God as El Roy, the first person to name God, the God who sees.
Mm-hmm.
And now I take pleasure in the fact that she has the last say, because we are told that his mother, Ishmael's mother, found him an Egyptian wife. But you know, when you think of the two names of Ishmael and Israel and the conflict between the two children of Abraham, the descendants of Jacob, Israel, the descendants of Ishmael, to this day, the children of Abraham are in conflict. The land that Abraham was given is the site of struggle between the sons. Well, just as the mother Hagar struggled through her life. She's certainly one of the most neglected figures. The other figure in the book of Genesis that is a tragic story is the story of Dinah, or Dinah as she was called.
Yeah.
And it's again the same theme of fracturing tenuous peace in a troubled land. Like, her story is a different story from those of the other great women like Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah. She's the daughter of Leah, the one who is not loved. And she goes out to visit the women of the land that they have come to. Well, maybe she shouldn't have done that. I don't know about that. There's something sociable about that action.
And yeah, well, she supports the other women. I think that's really, that's brave. And yeah, but maybe it was, maybe she, but, and she wouldn't have gone on her own at the time, would she?
She went out on her own from the sound of the story. But then, of course, that's when she is violated by Shechem. Her story's in Genesis 34. The consequences are horrendous. Her appearance in the story is brief, but her legacy is significant. When you look at, Debbie brought up the point of, you know, the sort of the consequences, the social aspects and so on of the women in the stories. Well, here, Shechem's assault. The political perspective is dynamic. It's frightening, really. It's cruel. The story starts innocently. She goes out to see the daughters of the land to socialize with Canaanite women. But she meets with disaster when Shechem, who is the prince of the land, assaults her. And he then falls in love with her. Well, that's again an interesting issue. And they make arrangements for the traditional courtship with his father Hamor, who's the leader of the land. And then the legislation in Judaism, an unmarried woman who was raped was to be married by the rapist and could not be divorced because she would not be able to be married after that particular action. She would not be accepted. And not only that, he was not allowed to divorce her He had to maintain her for her whole life, for his whole life.
But that was for the security of the woman. That's to keep her safe, yes, because she wouldn't have had any other chance,
Yes, and something good comes out of something nasty. But then, of course, what happens? The two sons of Leah, Reuben and Simeon. And honestly, it's a very interesting thing that they are the children of Leah, and their very names express the sadness of Leah. A name that means, surely my husband will love me. Think of that. There's another sad figure, a tragic figure there. Right, and of course, the law that came in, this one about not divorcing a raped woman, with no man shall marry two sisters.
Mm-hmm.
The suffering of Leah. Right, so it's things that sometimes out of these situations, protective laws emerge.
Brother Kieran, it seems really interesting because none of the women that you were mentioning now had this normal life, what you would see as a normal, happy life, gets married and has children. Sarah doesn't have children until very late. Hagar has a child but is chased away because she was only like a surrogate woman, mother. Yes. And then you have Dinah who had to marry her raper. And you have then the two women who were sisters who were not supposed to be married to the same man. So there is none of these women that you mentioned that has this perfect life. They're not perfect.
Well, Dinah, you know, we'd probably call it Dinah in English, never is consulted at all about how she feels, because her two brothers immediately react by demanding that these people in this land have to become covenant people, be circumcised. And then in the sort of negative reaction they have health-wise, they set out to murder all the men and take the wives and children. Now, what, of course, does Jacob do about it? Nothing. He doesn't react to the situation for his daughter, doesn't react to the situation with regard to the destruction of any possibility of living and trading with other people within the land.
That's really it's really negative on Jacob.
Well, I know, but it's also the situation of Dinah. She's just left unknown. That's it. She's just a figure that appears and disappears into obscurity. But what has been triggered off is, are we able to live with other people or not? So, yes, it's a tragic story. Her story is just a brief appearance, but with a consequence that to our day raises questions about ability to live with one another.
Oh, my God. So it seems like the Bible is full of marginalized women. And, it's very tragic.
Oh, but you see, this is just out of Genesis. The book that disturbs me the most is the book of Judges. They come to the land. Again, see the issue of land. What are the promises to the patriarchs? Land, children to live in the land, and election to have a God. A God that cares for them. And in the book of Judges, what the story says, there's a famous book called Texts of Terror by Phyllis Trible. And Hagar's story is there. But then the other stories that are there in the book of Judges, we have the entry into the land, that interesting figure, Rahab, the harlot of Jericho, that shelters the spies, and in exchange, he recognizes that God will, that their God will succeed. So she asks for protection for her and her family. Then she joins the people, and in the interesting stories that surround her that are not within the Bible, she marries Joshua and becomes the ancestor of at least 8 prophets.
Wow.
And that's just a start of it. So there's a sort of an interesting figure. But then what happens? You have this wonderful figure, the wife of Manoah, who's the mother of Samson. She gets a message from an angel. And Manoah thinks everybody's going to die because the angel came. And they've seen God. You see God and die, you know. So very wise. Manoah's wife said, oh, look, if I'm going to have a child, there's got to be a purpose for us continuing to live. So it's a bit more sensible. And then, of course, that's a wonderful story of Samson. We can't mention the story of Samson without Delilah.
What was the story about Delilah?
A good barber. She's a good barber. She cuts his hair off and takes away his strength so they can overcome him.
Oh.
That's that interesting story. Then you get to the story of, a wonderful story. You don't have to all be negative. In Judges, you get the story of Deborah, who is a judge and a prophet and a fighter. And she actually, she calls Barak to war. And he won't go unless you come with me. And then, of course, who kills off the enemy? Sisera? It's Jael. She nails him to the ground with a tent peg. And what's the reaction? Blessed are you among women.
Oh, we know this phrase.
I know we do, don't we? Yes. And then, of course, we have that heartbreaking story of Jephthah's daughter.
Yes.
This young woman who's the victim of a foolish vow by her father.
That's sad with the foolish vows, because it also reminds me of Salome.
Oh. Yes, tell us that one.
The foolish vows, and Salome was dancing, and her mother said
John the Baptist. Yes, yes. And then, of course, the most violent and destructive story in the whole of the Hebrew scriptures with regard to women is the story of the Levite's concubine.
What is that story about? Can you tell us?
That's a shocking story of a woman who leaves she's a concubine who leaves this Levite, and he goes looking for her to speak to her heart. And he has spent all his time carousing with her father. And then, of course, time marches on, and they are going to return. And I think it's to a place called Gibeah. And there, there is an attack on the house to rape the women, the daughter of their host. And this Levite's concubine gets pushed out to them, and she's raped for a whole of the night. She comes back, and there's this terrible line with her. She's lying at the door with her hand on the threshold. And the concubine, is she dead or not? We're not told. He takes a knife and cuts her body up into parts, sends them out to the different tribes. I mean, these stories are there. And I know when you go through them all, you say, what in God's name is all that doing? It's reminding us again and again of the sin of patriarchy that began in Genesis. And it reaches its most violent conclusion here. And he takes the knife, sends pieces of the body out to call the tribes of Israel against the tribe that committed this atrocity. And there's these battles, and they almost wipe out the tribe of Benjamin. There are 600 left, men left, and they have to find wives for them. So they go out, and they, first of all, they fight against some group who didn't join them in the battle against Benjamin. And they find, finally, they have 400 women who are given.
So they were the not considered Benjamin. As human beings, not as
but
equals.
There are another 200 that have to be got, the dancing daughters of Shiloh, are then added to the group. So the rape of one became the rape of 600. That is the story that is in a time, a disturbed time, when people rose to the top and fell to the pit in the society. And the line that kept coming through, in those days there was no king in Israel and everybody did as they wanted. Now, well, king does arrive, David. And what about David? What do we get? We get the story of Bathsheba. But the most shocking story is of his daughter, another daughter called Tamar. And she, of course, is the victim of her half-brother who lusts after her. And she has the wisdom. She tells him, you will be a fool in Israel if you do this. The oldest son of David. And, of course, by doing this, he loses any credibility. The father does nothing. But Tamar's full brother, who is Absalom, very famous character.
Yeah, with a beautiful Absalom, hair.
Yeah, Absalom takes revenge against the rapist of his sister. And in the end, that whole deception. The words of Nathan come back to haunt David, that the sword will never depart from your house. You see how the women fit into these stories.
Yeah,
but you know what?
When we come to, we've had now the stories of the Old Testament or the Hebrew Bible, but how does Mary fit in there? Because we're talking about genealogy, especially now in the year of Matthew.
Yeah, I'll come to that one, but there's one last little touch to the, you know, interestingly, Debbie did bring up the mention of the book of Ruth. Yes. Now, in the Hebrew Bible, the book of Ruth follows that wonderful piece from Proverbs about chapter 31, I think it is, of who will find a good wife. There's that wonderful description, and the book of Ruth then comes straight after. In our Bibles, the book of Ruth follows the book of Judges. And it, I think in a way, it's almost a softening of the violence against women that we have seen in Judges.
Yeah.
I think we must never forget that these stories are there. When I actually, in the Philippines, I was asked to give a session on these women. And when I told these stories, there was an Australian sister who worked in Papua New Guinea. And she said, I can use those stories. She said, I have seen three women hacked to death in front of my eyes.
Oh, no.
Well, you see, well, don't look at our own society. Even in, we've just had a court case in our own society about some terrible behavior towards women. These stories are reminders of the perpetuation of some of these atrocities.
Brother Karen, we're coming to the end of the interview.
Yes,
almost.
Mary.
So I do want to see how...
Mary.
Are these the ancestors also of Mary?
Yes. Oh, yes, sure. I love the Book of Judith. That's not in the Hebrew canon, but it's... For the beauty of the story of Judith, wisdom is there. Wisdom woman. And Hannah has a beautiful prayer that is the origin of the Magnificat. Wisdom is so much part of some of these stories. And Debbie brought up the line, I am here. Some of these women have spoken that, like that beautiful figure of Rebecca, one of my favorite characters. She chooses. She says yes. Mary says yes. That's why I find I'm going to actually, when I do this course on Mary, I'm going to begin with a wisdom story with a woman from the Old Testament, from the Hebrew Scriptures, that somehow or other touches into this figure of Mary that's or trade. We get Matthew's genealogy, three women, four women, five women. They're there. Mary is the fifth. Why those connections? We'll see that. And we'll see how, I've started with Judith for the Gospel of Mark, right? And I can see all sorts of possibilities now of seeing how it's obvious that for the Magnificat, we go back to the story of Hannah, the mother of Samuel. And I've become very conscious of the number of biblical books that begin with wisdom. There are the first couple of chapters of the book of Exodus. Without the women, there would be no Moses. We get the stories of those midwives, Shiphrah and Puah. Imagine keeping the two names, those two names for midwives. Yeah. So, yes, books begin with Mary. The Gospels begin with Mary also, several of them. Yes, even though that she might become a little bit late on the scene.
So we'll hear a lot more, but it's good to have this connection and just to be reminded that nobody is perfect in the Bible. It's there are so many stories. It's so human, as we mentioned also with Debbie. It's what does Father Kevin Wilde always says, there's nothing new under the sun. It's happening still, and it's still such a shame that humanity hasn't learned that there are still cruelties in the world. It's not changed.
Oh, yes.
Thank you so much for this insight, and we're looking forward to the sessions on Mary and building up on her ancestors, especially on the female ancestors. And again, Mary does not fit in that traditional picture of getting married and having a child, but she is with child before she is married, but she has been betrothed before.
And there are no male involved in it.
Yes.
Patriarchy gets its final squelch.
So that's why Jesus is so special.
Yes. Right.
Oh, thank you very much, Brother Kieran. And so what is coming up at Titipona Mo Study and Joy, as I mentioned earlier, Brother Kieran is going to give four sessions on Mary in the scriptures. These are four consecutive Mondays starting on the 19th of June, 7 to 8:30 p.m. It's on Zoom, and there is no charge, but donations are welcome. Then the series on women in the Bible, which is planned for August and September. So there we will cover almost all the main female figures in the scriptures. And then some other sessions from Titipona Mo Study and Joy. We have Focus on Target, Draw Fresh Momentum with Letitia Putenpadat. And this is on four consecutive Tuesdays starting on the 27th of June, 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. I hope that is your lunch break. Four sessions to stop and reflect on where we are heading. The sessions are positive and interactive, and each session lends itself to the next one. So I'd like to close this interview with my thanks to Brother Kieran. And also, if you would like to have any other information or look at our programs or video clips on many different topics on the Bible and other sessions, and just check out www.studyjoy.nz. Kia kaha, keep safe, and thank you, Brother Kieran.
Out there, old peace is calling, in the bonds of love we meet, for the world a new day dawning and shining. In our